Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here today to discuss the offense from that loss to the Jaguars 28-27 on Sunday in Jacksonville. Bummer of a game, but here to make us feel better about it and talk about it with us is Josh Reed. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. You know, result of that game aside.
Josh telling me all about his Thanksgiving and some of the planes, trains, and automobiles he took to get around. It sounded like quite a journey. But tell folks where you can be found on Twitter, where they can talk football with you.
Twitter, I'm at Josh Reed 907. I always say 907 because that's what we say. You know, when you're from Alaska, you always say 907, but it's actually 907. So at Josh Reed 907, and that's where you can find me on Twitter. And then where I'm writing these days, my full time job is with Anchorage Daily News up here in Anchorage, Alaska. But my Ravens content, I write for Heavy on Ravens for Heavy Incorporated. So that's where you can find my writing on all things Ravens.
All right. Outstanding. I need to thank our sponsor, Liquid Death, the water that will murder your thirst. Please give their product a try. They've been good to us. They have some good flavors, nice seltzer lime that's good. And they're coming tall boy cans that are recyclable, which is a real positive for the environment. If you drink out of plastic, it will end up in a landfill in today's economic environment. Recycling aluminum makes sense for the recycler. Anyway, getting back to this game, I think what everybody's talking about today, even though I'm not sure it was exactly what lost the Ravens the game, because you can point to a lot of plays, particularly on defense in that fourth quarter that did not go well, but on offense throughout the game. But the thing they're talking about on offense is that the plays are just getting in way too slow from the sideline.
Yeah. And Harbaugh talked about that on Monday and talked about after the game on Sunday. And it's just, you know, it's really, to me, it's almost like an overthinking on Roman's part, and then a lack of execution. And I don't know what it is, man. I feel like it's a combination of things. And they said really that they went to more fast tempo stuff in the second half. But even then, I mean, it's way too often that we're seeing Lamar, you know, clapping his hands, and mm-hmm. and spiking the ball because, you know, the delay game and so many procedural penalties. And it's just it's sloppy before it even gets started, you know. And it's really frustrating because, you know, like, this team is just so capable of being much crisper on that side of the ball. And Lamar even said that, you know, like, in practice they do a great job of doing it, but, you know, come game time, it's just, they're just not on the same page. It just take a while to get everything going.
It's interesting that Lamar is saying it that way, because there could be several problems here, and they really need to quality control this out and figure out where it is not working. You know, because one possibility is in the choice of play by Roman, that he may be having trouble choosing a play appropriate to down and distance, in which case an assistant who, like, preps two choices for him for the next play based on down and distance, like, maybe have three guys. And you know, this guy's working on what happens if this ends up being second and 7-10. And this guy is, if it's between 4 and 6, and this guy is between, it's 1 and 3. Kind of thing, each of them is responsible for picking a run and a pass to follow up this play based on what he knows on personnel. You know, submitting those to Raven to Roman, and then having Roman choose one of the two. Then he doesn't have to go through his entire sheet to figure it out. And I'm sure he's got his plays organized like that anyway, But, you know, it's got to be something that prompts him to make a choice from a quicker list. If that indeed is where the problem is breaking down, it is possible that some of the breakdown is from communication and getting the play to Lamar and actually having Lamar be able to communicate that play to the other players in the huddle. I really don't know where the process breaks down. I suspect, and you know, based on what we've heard from Roman, based on what you just said about Lamar, that it's probably in the choosing of the play on Roman's end this is happening.
Yeah, that's really where I think the fault lies, is this, you know, kind of overthinking it too much. You know, you have all these options you want to do it, but I feel like in certain situations, it's like, okay, if you don't get a certain amount of yards on first down, you should have a slate of plays, that whole long list of plays, like maybe like four or five or six different plays you can choose from. And like, all right, we only got 2 yards on first down. Okay, this is our set of plays on second and long, or second and short, second and medium. Mm-hmm. I just feel like, you know, he's kind of like overloading his own brain here. It's kind of galaxy brain, this whole thing on offense. And really, I'm not saying like go to a strictly RPO type thing, but like when I was watching the game later that day between the Eagles and the Packers, I was like, man, it must be so nice to have such a simplistic game plan, but like a nice, efficient, flowing game plan to where you're not overly sophisticating things, or it's kind of just like keeping it real basic. When you have these dual threat quarterbacks, like, you really don't have to overcomplicate things. And I feel like the Ravens do that so many times to where, like, all right, we're trying to get into the perfect play instead of just getting into a play. When you have a generational talent like quarterback that can do so many different things, so many things off script, so many things on, you know, in the structure of the offense or of the play, you don't have to overthink it as much, man.
Yeah, he can make any play a perfect play, or he can make a lot of different plays anyway a perfect play by making a play on his own. You know, they snapped the ball maybe four times right at zero or late. And you know, there's always that extra little bit of time they give you after the clock hits zero. And the Ravens really tested it on several plays. And then they snapped it late, obviously, one time. But the response to that was not really to get to the line of scrimmage super early. They had only four no huddle plays. And so they weren't doing much in terms of just call out a formation, let Lamar figure it out at the line of scrimmage. And you got to then probably have your linemen know less about whether or not they can advance down the field. You either have to have a called run or pass at the line of scrimmage. And that is one of the things about the Ravens offense. It can be a little difficult because Lamar likes to move. And when he moves, you can create an IDP pretty easily by having one of those linemen, you know, straggle down the field uncomfortably.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing that I've noticed about Lamar this year is he's really kind of like holding onto the ball along like a little bit longer than he should. And, you know, he's like trying to hold the ball just so he can like see if he can get that pass off instead of just being more decisive with taking off and running. And I feel like that's a lot of times with some of those illegal men downfield things is that, you know, he's really trying to, you know, extend play for the pass instead of just taking off and run.
I personally blame the linemen entirely for that. It's just my view of the thing is that they basically need to know that Lamar needs to be a threat to pass very late in a play. And the value of Lamar Jackson in a lot of ways is the extended play value. So I don't want to take that away from him. I want the linemen. I mean, they're not that much of a help anyway, blocking downfield for Lamar. If, you know, if Morgan Moses gets 5 yards downfield, is he going to really help Lamar with a block? Maybe, but probably not. You know, and wide receivers, eligible receivers, yeah, they have a good chance to help with a block because they're the kind of guys that can maintain their feet in front of a smaller man. But I blame the lineman entirely for that. I think the Ravens offense really needs to be built around giving Lamar that extended time. They had 3.23 average time to throw in this game. That's fantastic. He had 3.65 three games ago, not the Carolina game, the New Orleans game. 3.65, which is one of the highest of the entire year in the NFL. And you know, that's what really can break an opponent in terms of opportunities. You look at the Ravens' big plays in this game, obviously the Lamar throw to DeSean Jackson was a very extended play in terms of pocket time. It was one of the longest ample time and spaces in a clean, you know, drop back pocket the Ravens have had the entire year. And it came at a great time in terms of making a big play.
Yeah, totally. I'm not disagreeing with you on that point. It's just that, you know, there have been times where I'm like, man, if he just, you know, takes off instead of, because like sometimes, like, you know, even though he has ample time to throw in a pocket, guys are just not getting open. Guys are just not getting open. Or defenses, you know, like, you know, the defense on the other side is just, you know, really clamping down. And you got, like, you know, I'm not in that Dan Orlovsky camp where the Ravens offense is broken. You get too many guys running in the same area, but sometimes it is kind of clustered that way to where over the progression of the play, you do have several guys in one area. Lamar doesn't have anybody to throw to, and he still tries to, you know, hold the ball and try to wait for somebody to break free, and nobody does. At those times, man, just take off.
He probably, there's more he could do to do that. He's done a very good job, I think, of relativity again this year between his scramble yards and his sack yards lost. He's one of the few quarterbacks in the NFL that when you combine those two, you still get a positive number per play. And I think he's over 1 yard per play. I'm not sure if he's quite at 2 yards per play anyway. In 2019, he was over 5 yards per play on scrambles and sacks combined, which is just absolutely amazing. I did want to talk about the four known huddle plays, though, again, before we move on, is that they had, you know, a run for zero, a run for six, a pass for 11, and a pass for zero. The run for zero was the fourth and one, so that was bad. But at least they got to the line of scrimmage, no huddle. I think you have a better chance to make a play on a short yardage play. I like getting to the line of scrimmage quickly before the defense gets set up A gap, you know, exactly how they want in a set piece against your group. But the other thing that really held that number down was the fact that they didn't call the DPI on key on that Andrews play down the left sideline, and he couldn't haul it in with his left arm, which I thought he could have done. Difficult catch, but he's Mark Andrews. He's supposed to make some of those catches.
Yeah, I know. And people always compare him and Travis Kelce. I mean, Travis Kelce makes that catch nine times out of ten. And I thought it was going to be DPA all day. I mean, like, the guy, like Arden Key, really just like straight up grabbed his hand and held him back. I'm like, where's the line judge? You know, like on that play, like what are you looking at if you're not looking at this? And it was an ISO situation too. So like, what else are you looking at down the field on the left side of the field other than these two guys going at it? And like, I thought that was one of I wouldn't say many blown calls, one of many that, come on now, like you saw that, but you didn't see that, but you saw this.
They're watching a little bit of World Cup traditional football, we'll call it, you know, soccer, this last week and a half or so. But one of the things you see is a lot of intentional fouls that are similar in nature to what Key did to Andrews, where the guy puts his hand on his shoulder and kind of pulls the guy back. And, you know, it's kind of an art form in soccer. You want to try and not get yellow carded, but you want to try and give the guy enough of a bump that he can't get a breakaway goal, because that's where you're usually preventing it. It's very similar, actually, to pass interference in that way. And, you know, that play was yellow cardable. I'll put it that way in terms of what Key did to Andrews, I thought.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's just like what are you gonna do to like sell that call to try to get it? Sometimes, like, I feel like if maybe the receiver or the tight end in this case, kind of like, you know, as soon as you get some contact, just like kind of like jerk your whole body up, kind of make it an over exaggerated movement just to try to get the call. Like, you know, if you know that this guy is clearly getting a little too grabby with you, I don't know what are you gonna do to better sell that in that moment. It should have been called. I mean, that I'm not saying Lamar Andrews should try to get an Oscar with trying to draw the flag, but it's something that should have been called and wasn't. But you know, it is what it is.
Right. Injury front, obviously the offense missing Stanley probably did hurt. Not having Kolar is more of a little bit strange. To have Isaiah Likely out and Charlie Kolar not get his first action in this game is a little odd. DeSean Jackson obviously got his second elevation out of this. He's very close to getting a 53-man spot. But in a game where they're, you know, bringing up Stanfill, I think it was, the outside linebacker, and yes, you know, he's only there to play special teams, and they're bringing up Darryl Worley to be the extra defensive back, who did end up getting a defensive snap in this game. It's still very odd that Charlie Kolar does not seem to really be ready. And, you know, I hope they're making the most with him and Ajabo of the developmental practice time they're getting. But at some point, these guys got to get some live fire.
Yeah, totally. At this point, I mean, like, well, Ajabo's been practicing for like a month and a half now. And Kolar, I'm not understating the severity of his sports hernia injury, but, you know, like, I don't know. Like, you know, if not now, then when, you know, like, right. Yeah, you see the second half of the schedule, it's a soft schedule, but you don't have the kind of team, or your offense is not executing at the kind of high rate or efficiency that you cannot afford to not have as many weapons out there as possible. You know, like your margin for error, even though you're tied for first in the division with the Bengals, and they're playing excellent right now. To me, they're clearly the I wouldn't say best team in the division, but they're playing the best ball in the division right now. And if you don't get these guys some reps soon, and you know all your weapons are underperforming, then you might start losing some ground.
Yeah, it is. Even if the Ravens do lose a game in the standings to the Bengals, they'll still have their destiny in their own hands, as long as they have that Week 17 game left, but Week 18 game yet left. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. They need to get the right guys on the field. And I thought, you know, one of the other points I've been making, you know, every couple of pods is that these guys need to fail forward. Ajabo and Kolar. You know, in a sense, we've already had the fail forward, the important fail forward for two players. Jalen Armour-Davis has gotten a few snaps. I'd like to see him get more and take what he can away from the experience into 2023, even though he's not healthy right now. Daniel Falalele has had some snaps, and he's in a position where if he doesn't get any more, at least he's gotten those two games under his belt, and he can fail forward into 2023 and hopefully be a better player in terms of technique and whatnot. Than he was, and certainly they were two pretty bad games he put on at left tackle, but they weren't fall out of the bottom games for a left tackle. They weren't, you know, O'Neal Cousins or James Hurst at times Fs that we've seen in the past. They were just Fs, high Fs in his case. So I want to see Kolar put in some time like that, and if that means he gets 10 snaps and, you know, has some of the same problems that Isaiah Likely had earlier in this year, that's great. You know, that could be exactly what he needs to get started in his NFL career. Same thing for Ajabo. If we see one sack from Ajabo this year, I'll be fine with that. As long as he gets some significant playing time to accumulate that.
Yeah, totally. I feel like especially in the red zone, in the red zone where the Ravens are really struggling right now, a guy like Kolar could really come in clutch. I mean, he was great on extended play opportunities in college at Iowa State on stuff like mm-hmm. that. So I feel like I'm not saying that, you know, he's – like he makes that the catch in the back of the end zone that Marcus Robinson dropped, but those are the kind of catches that he did, I wouldn't say specialized in, but like made a habit of making in college.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that in particular was one of those plays that we're going to talk about in a little bit. I want to talk about that initial fourth and one decision on the third drive, because that's one that I think got talked a lot about in terms of whether or not the Ravens really should have gone for it. And that maybe, you know, playing against the Jaguars, you treat it a little bit differently. Where do you stand on that?
This the one that the QB sneak to Lamar?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I'm not the biggest Lamar Jackson QB sneak fan. Now, Lamar Jackson on QB power, Lamar Jackson on QB draw, you know, like, you know, I'll take that all day. But, you know, you get Gus Edwards back for the first time in 2-3 weeks. And, you know, last time you had him healthy, fourth and short, third and short, you know, those are money downs for Gus Edwards. So I would have much rather seen him get the ball in that play than Lamar do it. I mean, QB sneaks just haven't really been his forte since he's been in the league. And I said that instance, I'd rather see Gus the bus get the ball, and then the execution of that play just, you know, made it all the more like aggravating.
Patrick Ricard out of the eye in there, you can give it the up back. In that kind of situation, if you want
Lamar. Mark Andrews is a great Mark QB Andrews. Sneaker.
Yeah. Yeah, Mark Andrews on the pitch play to Lamar was a nice twist to have in there at least one time. I think you can run that more times. I don't even mind running something, even though it's not the ideal time to run it, like jet motion in that situation, because I think you have risks running the ball up the middle. You have risks certainly running the ball to the edge in a situation where everybody's along the line of scrimmage. But I also think Duvernay is a shifty cat, and getting him the ball and with what the Ravens can do, matching up blocker for blocker to the edge they choose to make the point of attack, can be pretty effective. So I think I would like to see a variety in how they approach those short yardage situations. A pure QB sneak in that situation might have been the best available call. Not really trying to judge that. What I really want to get into a little bit was, did the Ravens have enough they could win from that it was really worth it? And my initial like thought on the matter was I don't immediately love the play because I don't want to make a large bet in game win probability for a relatively small amount of win probability that you gain. And I'm going to give you the figures on those in a second from the Baldwin bot against a really bad team. So I'm supposed to dominate this team. I don't really mind punting that much because I'm going to play small pot poker effectively. I'm going to play for a lot of small wagers during the game. I should be winning most of the plays offensively and defensively. And there's no reason to make a whole big bet on one play that's fourth and one at midfield. And they, of course, did score a touchdown right off that. They did, right? Yeah, that was the one they scored a touchdown off. And
yeah, pretty sure.
And, you know, then I looked at the Ben Baldwin bot and I really had to reassess my thinking on this because according to that, the Ravens had a 2.1% win probability expected gain on that play, which is a lot for a play in the first quarter. That's a lot. But their entire range of outcomes there was only between 83% if they'd made it and 75% had they missed it. So only an 8% difference in win probability top to bottom. And it was 78% if they punted the ball. And then I think in those terms, and I'm like, that's too much win probability to leave on the table. They definitely needed to go for that. They just needed to make it. They need to find a better play and make the ball. But from from their own 30 going on fourth and one, that probably still would have been a slight win probability gain. And I probably would have been against trying it against a team like the Jaguars, where I thought, you know, they were clearly the better team and you want to make more small bets on that game than one really big one.
By now, you're probably noticing that there's strange tall boys of beer in the bottled water section of your local stores. Well, that's because it's not beer. It's actually mountain spring water from the Alps, and it's called Liquid Death. Why is it called Liquid Death? Well, because it will brutally murder your thirst, and their infinitely recyclable Tallboy cans help bring death to plastic bottles. They also donate 10% of their profits from every can sold to help kill plastic pollution. By now, you probably know how much I love Liquid Death. Well, every week I tell you about a different way I've used Liquid Death to mess with people. This week it was taking a cooler full of Liquid Death to the softball game. Because as our team chugged down Liquid Death, our play improved, while the other team drank other stuff and maybe got a little sloppy out on the field. So take Liquid Death. The other team has no clue what you're doing. Or take it to work. We've talked about that many times. Drag it around to your friends at school. Maybe the carpool lane. Maybe we'll talk about the carpool lane next week. Just take Liquid Death. Enjoy it. It's ice cold water. You're going to have a great time and fun. Go get Liquid Death at your local Harris Teeter or 7-Eleven, or find Liquid Death retailers near you with their store locator tool at liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. That's liquiddeath.com/filmstudy.
Yeah, kind of. I'm all for, like, you know, going for it in situations like that at the end of the game where you're trying to put away a game. But early in the game, you don't really need to. You're still kind of feeling this game out. And like I say, they weren't doing much against your defense up to that point. You know, like why risk it, especially on a play that in the history of, you know, Lamar being the quarterback hasn't been your most successful short yardage play.
Yeah, that's a valid point too. And you know, you don't always know, because the Ravens had won, I think, 8 of the first 9 plays defensively. So they gave up a big pass play on the second play of the game after the sack for the first down. And then they shut him down on 4 downs to get him off the field. And then they got him off on 3 downs on the second drive. So, you know, we're sitting there and thinking, we're looking pretty good here. It's 6-0. The offense has screwed the pooch on 2 red zone drives, you know, but they've dominated the game so far. And then, of course, that fourth and one honestly just turned the game around in a lot of ways. Didn't matter that it was a fumble. It was nice to get the one turn out of the way when it wasn't any worse than a 0-yard run. But honestly, it's just a kind of a disappointing play there. But I do think it was the right move when I looked at it mathematically. Then when the snap count battle 68-61 in this game, you know, when I look at that, I look and say they had about equal credit to the offense and the defense. The defense really dominated the game early, kept the Jaguars off the field in the first half. They didn't run a lot of plays at all, while the offense was you know, continuing to grind out some first downs. Just the problem was where their series failures were coming was always seemed to be in the red zone.
Yeah. They really controlled this game, man. It's just like when you look at it, and we're going to talk about the third down efficiency and all that kind of stuff. Like if you look at the box score, like, okay, you know, Ravens were efficient here, efficient there, efficient everywhere, but where it counted most. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the opposite of what the defense used to do under DNPs, that bend but don't break. You know, you let a team kind of march down the field a little bit, but then put the clamp down in the red zone. This year's Ravens, you know, like I won't say this year's, but like, you know, as of late, you know, like they moved the ball pretty consistently and pretty well. Just once they get inside the opposing team 20-yard line, it's just like things kind of go haywire between penalties, between poor execution, you know, drops and, you know, miscellaneous. It's just like they kind of just. You know, I don't know what to say about this team right now, offense at least.
It's very frustrating. I can only say older Baltimore sports fans, and probably a few years older than me, but not much, will remember Super Bowl III. And Super Bowl III, that's exactly what happened to the Baltimore Colts, is they were continually marching the ball down the field until they got inside the 20, and then they throw the ball away somehow to the Jets. And they really, in a lot of ways, dominated that game offensively. In a way that I think people don't really now know. They just turned the ball over like crazy when they got inside the 20 and got stopped. So that was it was an ugly ball game. And 2 years later, they turned the ball over 7 times and they still won the Super Bowl doing that, which is still incredible this day to me. But it just is frustrating as hell to be constantly going down the red zone. The only thing worse than coming away with field goals is obviously coming away with turnovers. So they didn't do that. But very frustrating game in terms of just relying on Tucker down there to score every point.
Yeah, because like sometimes when you're coming away with 3 instead of 7, I wouldn't say it's equivalent to a turnover, but it's almost like, oh man, you kind of have that same like, oh man, feeling as if they turned the ball over. Like, man, you were in prime scoring position right there. You know, you are a fingertip catch away, a drop pass in the back of the end zone away. And even the one that Andrews dropped, you know, that they end up scoring on a Gus Edwards run a few plays later. But even then, it's just like, come on, like yeah. what's going on with you guys right now? Like, Mark Andrews makes that catch 9 times out of 10, sometimes 10 times out of 10. It's just one of those days.
Yeah, that was fairly awful. And you know what really was apparent to us is now the Jags have some tall receivers. You know, Marvin Jones is a fairly tall guy, and Zay Jones is a linear athlete who you know definitely can get up fairly high. They had guys who were constantly going up to high point the football and doing it effectively. And the Ravens, not only could they not high point the ball, that play to Andrews was, they had 6 drops in this game, and they just destroyed Lamar with those. They destroyed the drive integrity and whatnot. You know, in one case they lost a score. In another case, they didn't lose the score, but they ended up, you know, having to run 2 more plays to get it. And I think 2 more. Yeah. So, you know, frustrating as hell.
Yeah, I saw one, somebody that tweeted out that they had 8 drops in total. I didn't go back through and count all the drops, but you know, like that kind of stuff. Like, I feel like drops shouldn't be counted against a quarterback completion percentage, because at the end of the day, Lamar was 16 of 32 for 50% completion percentage. But if you exit out some of those drops, then he's probably, you know, over 60. You know, because like they didn't throw the ball a whole lot, but 32 times is still a lot for this version of the Ravens.
Yeah, so I think he should have been like 22 out of 32. So that's really close to 70%. One more time, 69%. So yeah, it's a bummer. It was a good passing game from Lamar, and I think that anybody who was really looking at it, I saw PFF gave him a good grade, but I think anybody who's looking at it really says it was really much more the receivers in this game who let him down. Third down success, 8 of 14, despite all of the failures in the red zone. They still had great third down success. This is now 9 consecutive games that the Ravens have been over 40% or higher on third down, which is by far the longest streak now in Ravens history. They also allowed only 4 of 13 conversions on third down. So for all the success that Lawrence had, and a couple of those were on fourth down as well, so they converted a couple of these third downs they missed, obviously. But still, that's now 5 consecutive games where they've held the opponent under 31% on conversions, which is really impressive. 2 of those were 4 out of 13, so exactly 30.8%. But still impressive that the Ravens have done that.
Yeah, man, it's just like this on both sides of the ball, man. This team is just like on the precipice so many times of just like, you know, like just being that team, having an A-plus game, and they just come up short in these high leverage moments, whether it's on defense, you know, on fourth down or third and long, on fourth and five, on fourth and eight, whether it's on offense in the red zone. You know, like if you take out their red zone third downs, they're probably damn near perfect on third down because, like, you know, they convert time and time again, whether it's Lamar in a scramble, Lamar finding somebody open late, or like, you know, them just running the ball straight up on third and short. It's just like when it comes to these high leverage moments in the red zone on offense or on fourth down on defense, they just, I don't know, man. It's really frustrating. And like I was watching NFL Live the other day, and Dan Orlovsky was saying, if this team can play A-plus complimentary football, like they're arguably the hardest team to beat, but they just can't seem to put it together on both sides of the ball week in and week out.
Right. Obviously, some things went wrong on defense that were going right on defense the last couple of weeks. One of the problems, I mean, Patrick Queen and Roquan Smith together in one game regressed very significantly at the same time, which was unfortunate. You know, Patrick Queen had four missed tackles and he'd only had one in the previous 5 weeks. So he'd been 38 out of 39 on tackles, as I scored anyway. PFF has, I believe, for 38 out of 39, 39 out of 40, one of those two. And PFR had it as 39 out of 39 that he'd made during that time. So, you know, it's unfortunate that you have four missed in a game and then three missed by Roquan as well. So that was a lot of it. But then some of it's also explained by the fact that Lawrence throwing the ball to the outside, running backs involved, like those throws to Hasty, are going to create places where a running back can beat an inside linebacker in space, either with some combination of late diagnosis of the play or a move put on the player in space. So it's much harder, much easier to get a missed tackle out there than it is to get one, say, in the hole when, you know, Queen is trying to run through a hole and take somebody down.
Yeah, and you like to see some of those edge guys at least give the guy a bump to kind of get him off of his route a little bit. You know, at least like delay him before he goes out in the swing pass. Because whenever you have those running backs going out with a free release, I mean, we saw with Drake, you know, a few weeks back, you know, where he was just, you know, like on this little swing route to flare route, you throw it out to him, he gets a quick 7-5 yards when he doesn't drop the ball like he did this past like he did this past Sunday. But like I said, those swing passes, when those guys don't get impeded, can be really dangerous and advantageous for the running backs.
All right. Before we get into the red zone stuff, I want to talk to you about the general distribution of the football in this game. So they've gone back and forth, a little bit of schizophrenia in terms of the way they've run the offense. But with Tampa Bay, they threw the ball pretty much entirely to Likely. It was the one target approach, I'll call it. Then they went to the spread in New Orleans where they, I think, intentionally, scheme-wise, script-wise, they wanted to see a lot of different players catch the football. And they were effective doing it. And it wasn't a great passing game, but it did eventually set up the one pass for Likely for the touchdown against New Orleans. Then Carolina was all DeMarcus Robinson. Very few other targets and very few other completions of any length in that game. And they get back to this Jacks game, and again, they're pretty well spread out again. So Oliver certainly, you know, made some catches, made some yards, and Andrews had a substantial portion of the yards as well. But they're still getting some catches from Robinson, from Duvernay, from Ricard a couple of times. Don't know who else had some catches. I'm not looking at the thing right well, but there were about six or seven guys who actually had a catch in this game and made some yards on the play. And I want to get your opinion on this. Which do you think has more value to the Ravens? Do you think getting the ball spread out as much as you can to try and build an offense that defensive coordinators will have more trouble with? Or do you think it's more of finding Lamar targets that he could trust by having more targets in a single game such that he learns to trust a set of receivers, even if it's only one at a time?
Okay. Well, I got the number. There's still six different guys caught balls against Jacksonville. And to me, I'd much rather prefer Lamar to spread the ball around just so he doesn't kind of get – because if he gets keyed in on one guy, then the defense is going to get keyed in on one guy. And against the Buccaneers, they had no answers for Likely. And that's cool. When you have games like that, that's cool. And the offense can still roll efficiently. That's awesome because they still end up putting over 20 points against the Buccaneers. But then when you try to key in, when you key in on one guy like they were against Carolina last week, you know, you only scored 13 points. You know, like, so like if it's working that way and defense is giving you that guy or they have no answers for that guy, then cool. But I'd much rather you start off with spreading the ball around and peppering them all across the board.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because you mentioned the locking in on one target often can lead you to some extra interceptions, may even lead to some bracket play on your key receiver. We've seen that a lot in past years with Andrews. Yep. When he becomes the sole guy, Andrews becomes a big interception risk. In terms of overthrowing him or having Andrews himself tip the ball up and create a play for a safety behind him. So, I like that too. I think that probably does make sense more to spread it out. But I also like the fact that he seems to have some comfort throwing to DeSean Jackson now. And you know, if you want to pick up one other, I'd say he probably has some confidence throwing to Josh Oliver right now too. In terms of getting it to a guy that, you know, for whatever reason, and maybe it's Roman needs to get comfortable with what Josh Oliver can do catching the football, and not Lamar, but he certainly Lamar should have some trust with what Josh Oliver can do at this point.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of like some of the like rationale behind not having Kolar up this week, because they wanted to get Josh Oliver more heavily involved in the passing game. And there were some times even earlier in the game where he was open for some passes in the red zone that Lamar kind of missed. It was kind of looking one way, didn't see him flash in front of his face to the left where he could have got him on a quick slant for a touchdown. And Josh Oliver, man, they said a few weeks back this guy really earned his way onto this team, and he was a guy that most of us pegged as a bubble guy, clearly probably going to get cut. You know, he didn't show enough to get traded, but he really played his way off to this team. He's really come on strong as of late, and this was, you know, it's kind of like a sneaky storyline. You know, Josh Oliver revenge game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he looked every bit of the third round pick that they thought they were going to get in 2013 at a San Jose State.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know where the Ravens would be without Josh Oliver this year. Obviously, he's been very important for them and been a good blocker and caught the football when he's been asked to do it, and they went to him in some very key moments in this game. I do wish that the combination of his own understanding of what was going on from a game managed perspective and whatever was translated into the huddle would have led to him going down at the 1 yard line for a first down but not a touchdown on that touchdown catch. Ravens would have won the ball game if he had done that. And it's a shame, because I blame the coaches 94% of what happened, but I also blame Oliver a little bit, because Oliver, he can understand that while he's on the field and know that that's where I got to get for a first down. And that first down is probably going to win the game for us, because it's a kneel kick situation at that point. Probably would have left about 15 or 20 seconds on the clock for Jacksonville to come back and try and score a three. And by the way, a lot more happy having them try to do that than what happened, which was having the Ravens try to do that.
Yeah, and you know, Harbaugh even talked about that was a possibility, and they were thinking about that. He said that on his press conference on Monday that they, you know, it was a thought, you know, and going in there. But you know, I don't know. I can't really fault Josh Oliver. You know, like you're a former Jacksonville Jaguar. This team shipped you off for a bag of peanuts a few years back, and you have a chance to, you know, score your second NFL touchdown. If it was his first, I'd be like, okay, you really can't fault him for that. And it, you know, but it was the second ever NFL touchdown, and it gets his former team. And so whenever you're a player, you see nothing but green grass in front of you, and you are about to score, and you have all the faith in your defense that they're going to hold them. And you know, like I said, I don't fault him for it. You know, like I've seen guys like Nick Chubb go out of bounds, or you say Saquon Barkley just, you know, slide
down. Yep.
You slide down, and like, would that have been preferable? You know, yeah, sure. You know, but you know, in the heat of the moment, guys don't think like that. They see nothing but green grass in that end zone, they're going for it.
So my guest on the defense show last night, he suggested something that's just brilliant in the situation. Just code word goes into the huddle, like Daryl. And so Larry means left. You know, Robert or whatever R word you want to use means right. Okay. Daryl means get the hell down after you get the first down. Okay. So that's all you need to do to have that is tag that on the end of the play. But Oliver, if he'd been thinking in that particular instance, and who knows exactly what he thinks. There may, you know, there may be a spoken rule that basically Harbaugh says, unless we tell you to get down, don't try and be clever, because I will be angry kind of thing. But I look at that as if he had gone down at the 1 yard line and the Ravens win the game because of that, either by field goal or a third down touchdown, which are both equivalent, you know, both very reasonable possibilities in that sort of situation. I think Oliver gains more points in my book than having scored the touchdown alone by a factor of five. You know, he's got to do the standard things that tight ends do to catch that touchdown pass. He's got to do the standard things that tight ends do, catch that pass, and then think to go down, which I think is worth about four times as much in terms of situational awareness gain that the Ravens could have had. I would have been thoroughly impressed with him if he'd have done that, which is why I only put about 6% of the problem with him facetiously. You know, obviously I'm not cutting it that close, but I mostly blame this one on the coaches, just not being prepared for the play. The Ravens are at the line of scrimmage quickly on that play, by the way. There were still, you know, 16, 17 seconds left when they were at the line. So they had time to get it in, but their failure to get plays in quickly may still have played in to their unwillingness or inability to think they could get the code word or the word into the huddle that said, hey, don't score on this play.
Yeah, and maybe if it was a guy like Mark Andrews who was on that play, he might have had the savvy to get down or not score. But, you know, like a lot of times coaches would be like, act like you've been there before. And for a guy who hasn't been there in that situation a whole lot of time, then a Josh Oliver, you know, he might revert back to his, you know, just get in, because we don't know if like look, you have the greatest kicker in NFL history. You're gonna make a chip shot field goal. You've been doing it all game. Okay. But you know, like a guy like Mark Andrews might have had that, you know, heads up awareness to like, you know, get down. My fantasy owners might be mad at me, but I'd rather get this win to get this than, you know, get these 6 points for Joe Bag of Donuts in Wisconsin. You got my fantasy team.
It's a big ask of Oliver to do that, but it's not that big an ask of the coaches, because the Ravens, you know, by scoring six, they went up by five. So they had to get a 2-point conversion also to take the touchdown risk, to mitigate the touchdown risk. And by the way, it mitigated it, but it didn't eliminate it. And they obviously Jacksonville scored the touchdown, went for the two and got it. It's extremely frustrating to me when I think game management decisions aren't really being made effectively on the field because they're not being communicated into the huddle properly. And the Bears game last year, the Chicago Bears lost that game to the Ravens because of Mooney, I think it was the receiver who caught the touchdown pass to give them the lead. I might have it wrong. It might have been somebody else. Didn't go down. All I had to do is go down anywhere within the 5 yard line. He caught the ball 15 or something. All I had to do is go down inside the 5 yard line. The Bears win that game. There's no coming back. He goes in instead. Huntley drives him up the field for a game-tying touchdown, or game-tying field goal might have been, whichever it was. And then the Ravens won in overtime, if I recall correctly. But the Ravens did come back to win again. Yeah, they had no business.
Yeah, it was Marquise Goodwin. He plays for the Seahawks now. And that was one of Chris Westry, right down the right sideline on the cover zero.
That sounds right. It was a man coverage because of the cover zero.
Cover zero, yeah. Yeah, that was the one Westry got toasted by Marquise Goodwin. It didn't go to overtime. It was just Huntley had that big completion of Sammy Watkins get out of bounds, and then they ended up winning. It was like 16-13. Like
So they were down. They were put down 13-9 by the touchdown, and then the Ravens needed to come back there. But obviously, I think it was 9-7 because they must have missed the extra point or something, or maybe it was 16-14 they won because they got the extra point. But their kicker was a little shaky in that game. But still, if you're kicking from the 1 or 2 yard line, you know, which means you're kicking from the 9 yard line, let's call it, it's a 19 yard field goal, you're not gonna miss that in the NFL. Even Mr. Shakiest of the kickers.
Yeah.
All right. Enough of that griping about that. I've had enough. Let's gripe instead about the red zone now and the failures there, where the Ravens went 2 of 5. And just picking those apart, you know, the first drive, they had four red zone plays they ran, on their red zone series. And they had a delay of game, a pass for five, that got that yardage back, and then two incomplete passes. Obviously, it sucks to get the delay of game because that probably really reduced their chance to create a manageable third down, or one even where they might have gone for it on fourth down to make the play, and then they were forced to kick the field goal. The delay of game was the play that really, really sticks out there, as opposed to doing it to the Ravens.
Yeah, whenever you get backed up on that and back down in that part of the field, it's so debilitating because it's already a condensed part of the field. And some people be like, "Oh, look, you have more space," but no, like it kind of gets you out of rhythm because then it kind of changes your whole approach to it. And sometimes I feel especially with Greg Roman, like they get put behind even 5 yards, it's almost like, okay, now we got to pass. You can almost anticipate that they're going to try to throw some screen or some other kind of quick thing just to try to get those yards back real quick. And it's kind of like, you know, it disrupts the whole rhythm of offense, of this play calling down there. And then they kind of just kind of sputter out of control. And before you know it, you know, just getting backed up 5 yards, 10 yards ends up just kind of derailing the whole possession. And then you end up settling for a field goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very frustrating. And the second drive, they got down the red zone. It was a run for Jackson by 7 on first down. So they set up a 2nd and 3. Then Edwards gets stopped for -1. Then on the 3rd and 4 play, so you've still got a good chance to score here. Throw the ball into the end zone. Lofton, I think it was Lofton calling the game, right? I don't have that game that wrong, right? James Lofton?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the ball was at knee level. You know, it's great to have him calling the game because as an ex-receiver, he's mm-hmm. a guy who can tell you exactly how he should approach that catch. Collinsworth is also good for that when you get him. But, you know, you don't get off your feet on that. You run right through the football. You try and catch it knee high. I think Robinson probably has good experience with that, doing it with Mahomes and whatnot. And the only time you really go down to the ground, in my opinion, is when you have to or when you want to protect the football from somebody. You know, so the quarterback will often throw it at knee or shin level to try and protect that football, and then you got to go down and get it. But that was a play where it really didn't need to be done, and it ended up causing a drop by Robinson on a ball he really should have caught.
Yeah, and I love Lofton's explanation of that play too, because I was sitting there yelling the same thing, like, you didn't have to do that. You didn't have to do that. Like, golly, like they make the easy things look hard sometimes.
So we're blaming Roman on this first drive. We're blaming Robinson maybe on the third drive, on second drive rather. The third drive, I thought was a little different. So it was the 6th drive of the game. They're in the third quarter at this point. I think it was the first drive of the third quarter. And the first play of that drive was a run left for -1. And what it really was a very bad read by Lamar. I looked at the play and Lamar thought he had a little something up the middle or to the left because they were – they had moved there, but they had the Justice Hill was wide open for a big run going to the right. Two blockers were both out in space, ready to block the two defensive backs who were on that side. It looked like the linebackers were totally focused on Lamar and the possibility of him going left on that read. So this would have been a great handoff play to Hill. Should have made the right read. Unfortunately, didn't this time. It's going to happen from time to time, even with Jackson. And unfortunately, that was the play that really ended up killing it for the Ravens. They got a 3-yard run from Hill on the next play, which might not even be that great a play selection. And then on the last drive, on the last play of the drive, Jackson had a clean pocket that he was throwing from. It's his only sack of the day he took. And he took it, leaving the clean pocket, trying to run. Just didn't quite make it out of it. And he got taken down for -1. So it was a case of if he stands in there for another second and is able to deliver the football somewhere, someone breaks open, he's probably got the touchdown. He might have even gotten a better scramble opportunity by waiting another second. But the pocket did not appear to be collapsing around him at the point he took off there. And I actually had it as an ample time and space play in my results.
Yeah, it's just like the way like – opposing defenses are hyper aware of Lamar Jackson's ability to you know, gash you real quick if you don't keep your rushing integrity. So like when like people like, oh man, when they watch the Eagles and see Jalen Hurts, you know, running wide open to the ends, running almost unscathed into the end zone on a QB draw. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, people aren't scared of Jalen Hurts or aren't aware, but with Lamar,
it's not the same.
It's not the same. And with Lamar, you're hyper aware. Like, this guy is a former league MVP and Jalen Hurts may very well be on his way to getting a league MVP of his own. But what Lamar did in 2019 put the entire league on red alert. Like, hey, if you don't keep your rush lane in check, that's like the first thing they probably go over in their on the defensive meetings whenever they got to play the Ravens. Or even like and the other thing the people forget about this, the Jags were coming off of a bye. So not only were they healthy, well rested, they had 2 weeks to prepare for the Ravens. The 2 weeks to prepare for this very unique offense that the Ravens run. And for this very unique quarterback, so I'm pretty sure their defensive line coach, their linebackers coach, their offensive linebackers coach ingrained into their like, look, you guys, you cannot, we gotta keep contained, gotta keep your rush line integrity, because if you give this guy an inch of daylight, like Gale Sayers, all I need is what, 1 inch, that's all I need, and gone. And so like when people think, why can't the Ravens run what the Eagles run? Because people aren't as scared of Jalen Hurts as they are of Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you just said, is that the hyper-awareness is very clear. I think the place where it shows up most for the Ravens is the Ravens can never generate ample time and space for Lamar on a boot. And I think they actually might have done it once during this game, or maybe it was once during the previous game. And it's like, it stands out because you never see it happen. Every team basically runs the same boot play. They run a play action zone blocking play to the left side. And you'll see it because all the offensive linemen end up way over where they couldn't possibly help the quarterback on the boot play. The running back is off running to the left. It's almost always run to the left because with a right-handed quarterback, you want to roll right to be able to throw in either direction. If you roll to the left, you screw that right-handed quarterback most of the time. In fact, if he was Joe Flacco, you'll absolutely make him inert, or vestigial is the word I'm looking for. I think like an appendix. He's useless there. But when you always are rolling right off, always play action, it means that off always this zone show, the edge defender on the boot side is hyper aware of that with Jackson. Where they are all just, well, yeah, whatever, if it's Joe Flacco. So it's Joe Flacco, they think, oh, I can get to him in time. Well, not really true. Joe Flacco made some of his best plays creating time and space. Teams did eventually become aware of it. They eventually tried to shut it down, particularly in the division. But with Lamar Jackson, I mean, it's a whole different ballgame. Not only can he hurt you with his pass at three levels, he also becomes that extra X factor as a runner if you let him get out there. So that edge defender, he cannot mess it up. And I think you're absolutely right. I think they spend so much time going over that with various guys who could be playing on that right side in particular to make sure that containment isn't lost. You run right at Jackson. You make him throw that ball. Even if he throws a 10-yard completion, we don't care. Make him get rid of that football.
I know. And you can see the difference because they come straight. Like they just – they're just running full charge. They're not even trying to break down or move laterally or try to eliminate an angle to the sideline. They're just coming straight at him. And if they force him to throw the ball away, like you'll see a lot of times Lamar, what happens to Lamar, he'll just like, keep rolling right and then throw the ball away way out of bounds deep down the field because those guys are not playing with him. They're not like, no, you're not gonna put me on your highlight reel. I'm gonna keep this contained, or I'm gonna force you to throw this ball away, or or make you stop and try to juke me out, but then the Calvary's coming.
Yeah. All right, lots of frustration in the red zone there, obviously. A lot of frustration in terms of how the Ravens were able to keep on top of Lamar here. The yards per play were good enough to win this game at 6.1. They only had one sack for -1. They only had three offensive penalties, despite the holding penalty by McCary and the they did have offsetting penalties at 1.2, so it might have been four, or that might have been the third. It doesn't really matter. But they also had the one delay a game. But the point being that they did not give the defense a lot of variation of play result. Almost all the variation of play result that they gave them was in incomplete passes. And that is where they got themselves in trouble at some point. But they really moved very efficiently down the field, as offenses will do when they have a very low variance offense without big chunk negative plays. Defenses don't have a lot to work with in terms of getting a team off the field, even on three downs, let alone four.
Yeah, and like I said, this team has no problem moving the ball. Like, that's not the problem. Their problem is punching it in. And like you know, when you're having problems, you know, capitalizing on drives and settling for field goals against the Jaguars and the Panthers, like, what are you gonna do when you're going against the big bads in the AFC, like the Chiefs and the Bills and the Dolphins? And like, people are gonna bring up, well, they had the Dolphins beat, but you didn't beat the Dolphins. Well, they had the Bills beat and their defense, but you didn't beat them. And like, this, you can't tell me that this team now is, you know, they may have fixed some of their issues as far as blown coverages on the back end of defense, but you can't tell me that this team, this offense right now is currently constructed, can, you know, at the way they're performing right now, can go toe-to-toe and blow-for-blow with the Chiefs if their defense isn't having, you know, the best of days. You know, because even on their bad days, like, the Chiefs offense is still going to put up 20 to 27 points. On the Ravens' bad days, their offense struggles to put up 13.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, they've been playing the last 2 weeks without Ronnie Stanley for a lot of plays already. And that he's the biggest domino of them all in terms of making sure things are held together properly, offensive line wise. We'll get to that a little bit later. McCary didn't have a terrible game here, but, it limits what the Ravens can do. It limits some of how they block effectively, run and pass, to have Ronnie in there. And it limits certainly what Lamar expects out of his left tackle and how happy his feet get in terms of having to leave the pocket and maintaining his focus down the field. So I playing without Ronnie Stanley is a big deal. Playing without Hamilton right now is killing the Ravens on defense. And, you know, it's obviously their weakest position. Hamilton was a serviceable answer to, you know, put Hamilton in as your slot corner and to hell with it. If it doesn't work out because his speed isn't perfect, well, the other options are worse. So, you know, he'll create plays for you in a lot of different ways. He's an athlete. But there really isn't another answer for Ronnie Stanley. And most teams don't have one in terms of having a legitimately decent backup left tackle. McCary hasn't been utterly terrible this year. He's probably been slightly above the replacement level for the year, but he hasn't been good either.
Yeah. I mean, look at me wrong. He's better than Alejandro Villanueva, but yeah. You know, he's certainly no Ronnie Stanley. And it's just that, you know, to me, health and execution is like the biggest obstacle for this team right now. I mean, health and like key positions, like as you know, for like the first, like I wouldn't say first three quarters, Brandon Stevens played a really good game on defense, right? Mm-hmm. But it was those high leverage moments late in the game where you let the Jags hang around to where you know that deficiency and that gap between him and Hamilton really came back to bite you in the butt. And then back, you know, with Ronnie Stanley not being there, you know, Patrick McCary plays a solid game, you know, quarters 1-3, but then he gives up that, you know, that holding call late in the game that, you know, that really cost you. And it's just, and health and execution. Like, you know, if you're not executing early in the games, so you're not stopping on the necks of these lesser teams, then you're going to let them hang around. And then before you know it, like Lamar said after the game, you know, you give them confidence. And then before you know it, Trevor Lawrence is looking like the first overall pick that, you know, the golden child that we all thought he was going to be coming out of Clemson a few years back.
It's especially bad matchup for this team. And unfortunately, you know, accurate quarterbacks who get the ball out really quick, and he's very accurate, and he throws lasers. Not just doesn't get the ball out quick, gets the ball to the receiver even quicker than normal. You know, they have a good set of receivers for yards after catch, and unfortunately, the Ravens still had their tackling problems exposed in this game by all those factors that I think, you know, we're together having not their A team in terms of cornerback. Having, you know, not their linebackers kind of exposed in space by some of the routes run by running backs and also honestly by other people just crossing the middle of the field. You know, some of that was behind Queen, was behind Roquan, and it's just not their greatest strength. So, you know, it is what it is. Queen's been playing great football. I don't want to beat on him. I'm just saying that this was a bad matchup for Queen and Roquan, who have been good players these last few weeks, and I think are incredibly key to having the Ravens defense go where I think they can be, which is very near the top of the NFL the rest of the way.
And that's when plays like that, like you just mentioned, this is where, like, you, man, I wish we had Marcus Williams right now. Yep. Because those were the exact kind of plays that he was eliminating in week one against the Jets, week two against the Dolphins.
Yeah, and it would allow you to play dime defense again. So you, mm-hmm. you put Chuck Clark back up in the box, replacing Roquan or Queen, either one on third down. Don't care. Alternate. Do whatever you want. You know, both of them play 90% of the snaps, and Clark plays 20 as a dimebacker or 30 as a dimebacker, whatever. Then you really have a good coverage asset in the middle of the field who can help you. And he's a little bit of a, not a fish out of water, it's the wrong call, but it doesn't maximize who Chuck Clark is to have him on the back end. It maximizes who Chuck Clark is to have him in a short area coverage zone where he can hit a quarterback like almost nobody else in terms of coming downhill. He's a you know, hard tackling linebacker type to start with. And then he's also a guy who gives you coverage smarts in that area. And his own, you know, marginal speed is not marginalized by the play to have that happen. That's why we saw Anthony Levine have a great year there in 2018. Chuck Clark had an even greater year in 2019 when the Ravens played a ton of dime. And it would really help to have Chuck back in that dime back spot at the end of the year. If we could somehow get to that point, have Hamilton come back, have Williams come back, and you know, have real options in terms of how the coverage would work.
Yeah, totally agree.
Let's speed it up a little bit if we can. I'm sorry to do this to you, Josh, but I kind of want to get through some of this. Lamar, let's roll on. I want to give his ample time space ball out quick and pressure numbers here. 12 ample time space opportunities in this game out of 33. That was 36%. Six out of the 12 of those were complete. 143 net yards, so 11.9 yards per play, one TD. That, of course, included that massive throw to DeSean Jackson, but it's the best ATS game that Lamar has had in a long time. He's been having some really unimpressive ATS times and relatively few total ATS opportunities, but 36% in this game was good in terms of what he was delivered, and he made good on the in terms of the results on them.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. It's just the frustrating thing about this Ravens pass offense sometimes is because that's such a low volume. When you say low volume, you're like, well, he still threw the ball 32 times. So I'm like, well, you've got to factor in the drops. And, you know, but like, yeah, because they're not as high of a volume as some other teams, it's just like some of their misses are amplified. Or like, you're like, oh man, if he misses the Marcus Robinson on a deep over route on the second play of the game, you know, that kind of sticks in your head because you know, like, man, you might not get that again.
Yeah.
So you know, it's that he still had a fantastic day throwing the ball and made some really excellent throws, especially down the field. He had the one to Oliver, like the big one to DeSean Jackson, and it's just like if we can get more of that more consistently. I mean, sky's the limit for this team. No matter who he's throwing through, but he can make chicken salad out of chicken. You know what, with this group if they're able to just kind of connect more consistently.
So you think DeSean Jackson could give the Ravens anything in as a slant receiver, or is he strictly a deep threat at this point in his career? Because it seems, I mean, that route, he sped past everybody he faced. It wasn't just the guys who were trailing him at the end of the play who were hopelessly lost. It was all the guys he ran by from the slot to start that play that were obviously not in any position to cover at that point. And we saw Bateman have real success against Miami on the one play. You see some off coverage. You see some willingness to throw a cover zero look. I mean, I'd be scared, you know what-less, to have DeSean Jackson in the slot and try and run a cover zero play with the risk of him catching a slant and going the distance.
I mean, I think if he can stay healthy, I mean, DeSean Jackson, even at 35 going on 36, he'll be 36 on what, December 1st?
January or something, right?
Yeah. I think December 1st, something like that. His birthday's coming up real soon here, the soon to be 36-year-old. But you can see even on the first catch he had of the game, I mean, the guy had like a 10-yard cushion because he was even at that age, like, you know, like there, he had that much respect for DeSean Jackson's speed that, you know, he was playing 10, 12 yards off, and then he got that easy 12 yards on a little out route or in route. I can't remember which route it was, but like the threat of DeSean creates so much space for DeSean. And if you get this guy on the move or even on a longer developing play, if you can get that time to throw, then, I mean, watch out, man. Because if LJ and D-Jax can connect on more balls like that, at least – I'm not saying you got to do it at least four or five times a game, but at least once a game, twice a game, or just, you know, even some close calls will still scare the defense enough to, like, you know, open some more things up underneath for some other guys.
All you got to do is show it. I say all you got to do is show it. If he's on the field, they can't really cover zero blitz. They have to stack it somehow to try and get him covered because it's just too much of a risk otherwise. You're right, by the way. It's tomorrow that he turns 36. So the Ravens are relying on a bunch of ancient players right now to carry this team. So there is a lot of turnover that's going to have to occur with players like Houston and Pierre-Paul and Campbell and DeSean Jackson who are really producing for him now to move on to the next group. Anyway,
and that's why I really want this team to go far, because they have such a great blend of youth and seniority and veteran leadership and veteran talent that's playing above expectation right now. Mm-hmm. To where like this is the perfect team to go all the way, but like as far as from a talent and experience standpoint, and you know, it's like this nice injection of youth with this big rookie class that's contributing in some key moments and some key positions for them. Then you have these seasoned veterans who've been around the block more than once. And it's just like, if this team can get it together on both sides of the ball, man, they can be so dangerous. And that's why I'm so like hopeful and optimistic for this team, that if they get their collective ish together, they can go far.
Yeah, I completely agree. Let me go back to Jackson for a minute. 7 ball out quicks. He went 6 for 7 on those for 52 yards. So no problem on that. That group is kind of truncated, as people who've been through this definition kind of know. 14 pressure events. He went 4 of 13 on those. And actually, that one of those was an ATS. The sack for -1 was an ATS. So I've got the numbers off a little bit here. It's actually, I think, 10.9 on 13 ATSs. And it was 13 pressures then, with slightly over 4 yards per play. But anyway, 4.5 or so. But Jackson he wasn't really bad in any relative to any normal standards on any of those three categories. I did think the Jaguars did him a favor by not really blitzing him. And there's been two teams recently that haven't really tried to blitz him. I think both of them have suffered for it. New Orleans and the Jaguars here.
Yeah. I mean, like earlier in the season, Lamar was just absolutely carving up the blitz, and then like teams just kind of stopped doing it. And then, you know, like with Stanley coming back, especially, like, you know, like, okay, this guy has his best pass protector back, and like, you know, if they have more answers for the blitz and better protection, then, you know, like, yeah, you may not be as inclined to try to do it, but you got to do something. If he's carving you up either way, you know, like something beats nothing. And I think nothing can really hurt you at times, whereas sometimes, like, even if they do have answers for it, sometimes there are still drops. There are still incompletions. There are still guys kind of running the wrong routes, running into each other at times.
Yeah, I mean, certainly a lot of things are going wrong for the Ravens offense at times. You know, we're also – we are used to some very green grass being on this side of the fence with having Lamar Jackson at quarterback. In the first half of 2020 and all of 2019, Ravens fans got very spoiled with who this team. Even the last, you know, the last half of 2018, when they ran the ball at will against everybody, you know, Ravens fans got really spoiled by what it was that they had. And then, as you know, we had a significant offensive line departures, injuries in terms of Yanda, in terms of losing Stanley for basically 2 years. You know, it's those things set an offense back very significantly. And it was an offense that was built on a good offensive line, a fairly average set of skill position players. Mark Andrews gets an apology there, but a fairly average set of skill position players, certainly nothing special at wide receiver, not too much really special outside of Mark Andrews at tight end, and a set of running backs, frankly, who, you know, it's not like J.K. Dobbins wasn't valuable for a year and that Gus Edwards wasn't valuable for more time than that, but they're stylistic fits for who the Ravens are. They're great stylistic fits for playing with Lamar Jackson. And it's just, we got very spoiled during that time. And now, you know, the situation is not as good. You don't have, first of all, the fairly decent running backs. You have a bunch of geriatric running backs you're bringing in and rotating with, you know, all the 5 guys from the last 2 years that include Drake and Davis and the Bell and Freeman and
Murray.
Yeah, those are the 5. I mean, those guys, you know, maybe shouldn't be on anybody's roster. Drake has played well enough that's not fair for him this year. The other 4 of them, they probably didn't deserve to be on anybody's roster.
Yeah, I totally agree. And people always want to, like, you know, always want to go back to 2019. But I was like, dude, you had a Hall of Fame guard and Marshall Yanda who could play just about any position on the offensive line if needed, and who did a tremendous job in helping out both the center and a budding Orlando Brown Jr., and a healthy Ronnie Stanley. You can't discount that. Like, the Ravens offensive line this year is pretty damn good. One of the best in the league. But it's not that unit. You know, it's not that unit. It wasn't a prime Ronnie Stanley who was emerging into all-pro form. It wasn't Orlando Brown playing next to a future Hall of Famer and Marshall Yanda who masked so many deficiencies across the offensive line with his excellent level of play. It's just not the same.
It's really weird, but the guy who's better is the 2019 line. He's the most maligned guy on the entire line, and that's Powers. The other guy who's maligned from the 2019 line, but he had his best season that year, is Matt Skura. And he was a much more balanced pass and run blocker than Linderbaum is. Linderbaum's a good run blocker. People want to think like that's all that matters. It's not. In fact, blocking in space is not as important as blocking in line. Blocking for passing is far more important than blocking for running. So his gifts, while exciting to see, fun to watch, and I think they can be improved upon. You know, Matt Skura was a fourth-year veteran, I believe, in 2019. He was just about to leave in free agency. That's right. And he was having his best year at that point. He jokingly put out Pro Bowl ballots for himself at midseason. I don't know if you remember that, but the Ravens had their own made, and then he made up a homemade one of his own that was just it was hilarious. It was great to see it done, but Matt had a really good year, and I think Linderbaum, while I have a lot of hope for what he can become, he's not there now, and we shouldn't be pretending like it. So we'll get into Linderbaum a little later.
Yeah, totally. He's on the right trajectory, though.
Yeah, right trajectory. I agree. That's the way to say it. We've talked about the drops. We talked about the time to throw. We talked about the frustration and the speed of calls. So I think we've basically handled a lot of this. I did think the Jaguars, I'll just reiterate the point that they really did the Ravens a favor in a lot of ways to stick with a four-man pass rush and drop seven. I know they've got some problems in the secondary too, in terms of trying to cover people. So they probably were thinking, we've got a pretty good pass rush. We think we can generate some pressure with four, but the teams that have been successful against Lamar have gotten pressure by having that odd man come more times and being quick about effectively green-dogging. It's not the correct term, because green-dogging, obviously you're waiting to make sure an eligible receiver is not going out, but it's more like green-dogging Lamar himself as a spy. As soon as you see any indication that he's leaving the pocket, you send that faster linebacker that you've got in spying in as the extra rusher at that point. And sometimes you just do it with safety or do it off the slot or whatever, just to give Lamar some trouble. But he's had a lot of trouble with that in recent weeks. And I think the Jaguars kind of did him a little favor to be rushing four so often.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right. Josh, always a pleasure to talk football with you. Now, we're going to come back and do part two of this show. Really appreciate you doing that and sticking around for that. Tell folks one more time where they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me at JoshReed907, and you can read a lot of my work at Heavy on Ravens for Heavy Incorporated.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Love to hear about that. If you wouldn't mind taking a moment to write a review, you're the best fans we've got if you're still listening at this point. So we really appreciate that. And it's always nice. The other thing we are asking people to do is tell one other person you know that doesn't listen to podcasts, maybe. Just have them go to the website, turn on this podcast at work or somewhere else. Yeah, it's okay with me for you to waste time at work. Yeah, but seriously, to give the podcast a try. And particularly if you think we've talked about something interesting this week that they might like. And that word of mouth is primarily what we have. Josh, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.